You're listening to Inclusive AF with Jackie Clayton and Katie Van Horn.
Hello, hello, hello. Hi, Jackie.
Hola. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm awesome. How are you?
You know what? Can I just tell you, I'm finally okay. I needed in life was to know where everybody was. Okay. Legit, as everybody who, as our millions of fans know.
millions.
Hannah, aka Clayton Clayton, has been in NYC. And they were, you know, living their best life. And literally, they came home Saturday, unpacked, I got in bed, and started weeping like Schindler's List. I finally figured out, I was like, I think I've been holding my breath for 3 months. Like,
while they've been
I'm
gone.
So I feel much better.
Okay, good.
Just because it's an hour and a half instead of a 5 hour, 2 hour drive, 5 hour plane ride, 2 hour Uber. So
yes.
That being said, you know, that happened and the puppy ate the pee pad while we were gone. So, you know, it balances
out. It's all coming together. Yeah. I can't say that I have slept and like a good night's sleep because it's the dogs and the cats and the everything. So, but Jackie, we have a very exciting guest today. I don't know if you know this, Jackie, but you might know it since they're on with us.
Yes.
So Helvetica Black is joining us today. And Helvetica, we would love for you to introduce yourself. First of all, where are you physically on the earth today?
Right now, physically on the earth, I am in Waco, Texas. Well, technically I'm in China Springs. So I'm like essentially in Waco, but like, for all intents and purposes, I'm in China Springs. That's like where my address is. And then in the next like month or so, I will be moved to the Windy City. I'm moving to Chicago. So
Exciting. That's awesome.
So excited for you. Yes,
I'm very excited. Well, thank you.
Tell our listeners a little bit about you. And, you know, we are excited to have you. So would love for you to share a little bit about yourself.
Thank you. I always like to say that I'm a writer, drag queen, socialist, icon extraordinaire. I am 21 years old, or almost, and I am a non-binary person. I'm a trans non-binary person. My pronouns are they, them out of drag, but I do prefer she, her when I am in drag. And essentially, I have two associate's degrees, one in political science and one in psychology. And I decided to use those for drag instead of what they are typically used for. I believe that Black trans people are divine beings. And I love to navigate life with this divinity in this way that I get to scope out and make sense of what gender is and how it exists and how it kind of weirdly, like, despite not being real because it's a construct, how like race and gender both being social constructs, how they in a weird way both like brighten up my life as a trans person but also plague and dim it. And I like to navigate those things and dissect it and like see where it gets me. And right now it's gotten me to drag, and I literally love drag, and I love art and also politics. And I think that drag is inherently a very political art. And so I feel very inspired and driven at this moment to like use drag to navigate those issues in the world.
Awesome. So do you perform in drag?
I do not perform yet. I'm actually, I take photos, I sew, I think I'm a very stunning makeup artist, and I love to collaborate with my friends. My future roommate, and my, like, drag lover, Finn, is a very beautiful drag artist, and, so lots of my art that I make with, like, Finn, or my other friends, or even just on my own, is usually photo-based. But I did get to record some performances during the pandemic for like digital drag purposes. But then when Texas like lost power because of the storms, I missed out on a couple performances, but I'm excited to move to Chicago to like finally like hit the scene and dance around to some disco and like clown around with my drag friends. Like I'm very, I anticipate performing a lot.
I was gonna ask you, because right at the time, it's like you're launching up and then pandemic. How do you think like the how do you think the pandemic has affected drag overall? Like what has been the major change?
I think the queer people, I think more than any people, community is what brings us together. It's what builds us up. It's what lifts us through. I think about all of my, like, I actually spent a lot of time during the pandemic very sad for queer people who did not have access to other queer people, because sometimes queerness can be very lonely, especially in places like Waco, Texas. So the ability to see my friends, it shot down drastically. And I was like, this is actually very hard on me. And so, and what is good about drag? It's that it's this art that is incredibly personal to the performer, but is easily accessible to anybody because anybody can watch and participate in the art of drag. But when you say you can't go to clubs, you can't touch performers, you can't tip the dollar, you can't put on the heels and go shimmy around with your friends and be gay and merry, when they tell you that it's restricted to your home, it pulled a lot of life from the art form, is what I seem to have found amongst all of my friends who were having issues with it. And I think it was just a very weird predicament where like queer people were like, for the first time in my life, I cannot sink into my community, at least in person. Not only is queerness built on community, it's also it's built on sex. It's built on hugs. It's built on kisses. It's built on touch. And I feel like queer people were not allowed to touch each other for so long. And I think that like if you were a queer single person, so you had no partner, you were at home in the entirety of the pandemic by yourself, it was probably very like a depressing place for you. I actually did not start doing drag until the pandemic. It actually was like the kick in the ass that I needed because I finally had the time. And it gave me, I got to build like very small community, which has grown into a very big community. I got to meet some of my literal favorite people. How did the pandemic affect queerness? I think that like it just stole the life from queerness in a way that people just never anticipated happening. And I just also feel like it was a problem that nobody was really catering to because people often do not think of queer people. And so when people were like, what should we be discussing during this pandemic? I was like, we should be discussing the fact that like, I am alone. My brothers and sisters are alone. My siblings are alone. My queer family, they are separated. They are pulled apart and they are alone. Because in Texas and like other cities, especially major cities, like at one point you could not leave your home. Like they were like, unless it is literally because you have to go to the hospital or you're out of milk, you are not allowed to leave your home. And if we kept you, yeah. And like I lived in Hewitt at that time and somebody fully got arrested for going on a run. So like you couldn't even go on a run. You couldn't even like catch up with the girls outside. They were like, you're just not allowed to do any of these things. And so I feel like queer people were really restricted in that way. Especially because so much of our relationship with one another is built on the ability to touch. It's built on this tangibility of like, I know queerness exists in other people because I can touch it and I can feel it and I can see it. And I think that sometimes it's very easy to think you're all alone when you're queer, when there is not queerness directly in your face, if that is like registering, if that makes sense.
I think it makes sense. And plus some people found, like some people already knew that maybe home where they lived may not be their safest place where they find their happiness.
Yeah.
I know for a lot of us that do public speaking or work with people within diversity work, we're usually on stage. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were like, and I think it wasn't that long before the pandemic. I always say I hate doing webinars. I think I did 300 in the past year and a half.
Yeah.
Because there was nothing else to do. And trying to make that transition and still be relevant. Right. And still be relevant and still when you don't have that feedback. And I think part of what is important with the community is other people giving you that feedback. Like you were talking, it's touching another mm-hmm. person. You cannot get that through screen, you know? I just...
I completely agree. And I feel like it wasn't really, I think because we were like prioritizing safety so much. Well, I mean, not really Texas in a weird way, but because safety was being prioritized by so many people, there came a time where I was like, I have to sacrifice the ability to like see who I love and care about because I have to be good to them and I have to prioritize their safety. And the selfish and small me was like, I want to see my friends. I want to give them a kiss on the cheek. I want to hug my people. The big me was like, you can lose a hug for 3 more months if it means that your friends get to live to hug you another day. Right. And like, that's genuinely how serious it was for some people. And I just feel like in a weird way, for some people, it was very easy to just like be the small man and be like, I want this and I want it now. And I feel like because queer communities are communities that are not often looked after by other people outside of queer people really had to be like, oh, well, damn, I am really restricted to myself, you know, and maintaining my queerness in a way. And like, it's honestly, like, I always feel like I probably wouldn't have made it through the pandemic had I not finally sat down and was like, I'm going to do drag.
Mm.
So I think obviously good things come out of it, but I think also like in another way, it was incredibly painful. I mean, I spoke of them earlier, but like Finn, who will be my roommate when I move to Chicago, we met a year ago on Instagram, like right as the pandemic was kind of starting. I guess it was like a year and a half ago now, but about a year and a half ago, and we didn't really do a lot of talking, but in the last like 2 months we've become very close. But I do remember being like, oh, this is somebody that I may never get to meet, ever, never collaborate with, never be with in the same room, never hug, never touch, because this pandemic is literally changing everybody's life in this drastic way that nobody can see in front of their own 2 hands. They were like, what the hell is going to go, like, what the hell is happening? And when every day, I like to say that queer years are dog years. So every day felt like 7. I was like, oh my God, it's been 3
every
weeks.
Day felt like 7
yeah.
days.
Yeah, I was like, it's been like 3 weeks. And my friends were like, girl, it's been 3 days. And I was like, to you, it's been 3 days. But to me, it feels like I've been locked in a room for a year. Yeah, like it was a hard time for queer people, I believe.
Yeah, and so I love that you decided to start doing drag during this time. I mean, obviously as an expression of your personality, your, you know, who you are as a person. So tell us, so for those of you who are listening and not watching, Helvetica, I would love for you to describe yourself a little bit and kind of how you came up with Helvetica Black.
I see. Okay. So I like to think of, on a gender scale as a non-binary person, Helvetica is the pink to the blue that is assigned to who I am out of drag. I don't believe in cis passing. I believe in cis assumed. And out of drag, because I have short hair and I typically wear masculine clothing and things of that nature, I am assumed a man. And so sometimes my life is like heavily blue in a way that is very dark to me. But Helvetica is the pink. She brings it all alive. She is this access to my femininity that I always get. And I love her a lot because of that. But at the same time, despite me being able to separate the two of us in my mind, I am also Helvetica. I am always her. She is always a part of me. It never really is a facade. Jackie knows me out of drag and on a personal level. It's not anything different. I just have a wig on. Unless it's not a wig. I don't know. You tell me. And I think like, and so,
hey.
Yeah. So I think it, yeah, and how did I come up? My favorite font is Helvetica. And
it is the best
black,
font.
It's the best font.
Absolutely.
There's a great documentary on it if you've never seen it.
I've seen it.
Documentary. It's amazing. But it's my favorite font. And so I just switched up the spelling because I wanted something a little more like, for lack of a better term, just something a little more like Vicente. I was like, something just needs to be like fiercer about this. And so I took the C away because it's one of my least favorite letters, and I put a K and I threw another H in the end to make it a full circle. And then I added the black and dropped the C because we don't do C's in this house. And the black is obviously, I was writing because I'm a writer, and I was writing something for a philosophy paper because I finished my second associates while I was in quarantine. And I was writing in Helvetica, and it, like, if you hold it over like a letter, it'll tell you like Helvetica, comma, black. And I was like, ooh, that's a great name. And so I just like kind of put it in the back of my head. I was like, oh, that's who she is. And but then the black is also a reference to the fact that I am black. I think that on a level, as a black queer person, especially as a black trans person, black people are often asked, how are you prioritizing this? As a black person, as a woman, as a queer person, like, how are you prioritizing this? And the truth is that life does not give me enough peace to ever separate my identity. I am always being asked and demanded and attacked upon the fact that I am black and queer. And so my last name, Black, is a connection to, I think that Nina Simone once said that she thought that Black people were the most beautiful creatures on the earth. And I think that she was spot on. I think that there is a divinity amongst Black people, and there's a divinity amongst Black queer people. And Helvetica is this like gold chain link that attaches me to that divinity at any moment. And that is something that I will always love her for, because oftentimes out of drag, I am not allowed to access that out of safety, out of fear, out of people dimming it for me. No matter what it is, Helvetica can always access it. And it's something that I find is very powerful about her.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.
I love that, especially in freaking Waco, Texas, has a way of just smacking you down anyway. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right?
Agreed. Like, I agree.
You're always... whatever it is, it's just that small. Like, you can really be feeling yourself, and you go to HEB and then it throws everything out the window. And it's interesting how someone says, how do you, people expect, like you were saying, I am Helvetica Black. I am, you know, and then, but people are saying, oh, but I'm not talking to Helvetica. No, you always are. It's
you
a
always
part
are.
Of me.
Yeah.
Or someone said to me once, I said, everything that comes through my mouth is from the lens of a Black woman. We could be talking about fruit. It's a Black woman talking to you about fruit. And they were like, exactly. I never thought of you like that. It's like, well, you should.
Yeah. Right? I think it's actually a very important thing that I'm always very happy to tell people about, is that marginalized groups that are also white have the, like, whether that's a woman or a queer person, typically speaking, have an ability to pull it apart, to be like, today I answer as a woman, today I answer as a white person, today I answer this as a gay man, and tomorrow I answer this as just a white man. And queer people and Black people are, especially like just Black people, I think over any other group, marginalized group of people, are not given that opportunity. When a Black woman is critiqued, she is being critiqued as a Black woman, not as a Black person. It is like, there's a reason that there's misogyny and also misogynoir, because you cannot separate being a woman from being Black, because that is who you are every day when you walk the earth. I was watching Dear White People again during the pandemic, and there's a really beautiful line in there where one of the characters, I believe her name is Joelle, she is dating, she's like getting into this guy, but he's kind of a hotep, so like she has to like break it off, and she tells him like, because he's going on about how like it's so hard to be a Black man. She goes, every single day, what you go through as a Black man, I go through too, because I am Black. And then I come home and I take the brunt of it from you because I'm a woman. I don't get a break. There is no break for me. And that is how Black queerness, I feel, feels the exact same way. There is no break. There is no time where out of drag I have any rest. Or in, even in drag, sometimes I have no rest because there is always something to be upheld. There's always something to be discussed. There's always something being attacked in a weird way. And so, yeah, there is no break. There is no, today I'm just going to be Black because that'll be easier as if. But today I'm going to be queer, because the truth is that if someone looks at me, they literally only see, they see a Black person first. And if they can recognize queerness, they see me as a queer Black person. But I mean, once I start talking, and I don't believe that there's any shame in queerness, so I don't hide my queerness, then it becomes a bigger problem for some people. And then it all unrolls. But in time, I will always be exposed to other people as a Black queer person, which I think is very unique to how I navigate the world. And so I wouldn't give up either for a second, because I think that, like, first off, I would lose out, and the people around me that are looking for my words would also lose out. Like, I think it's very important that, like, both are catered to and seen as equal. I am no less Black than I am queer, and vice versa. So that's how I feel about the, that kind of thing.
But you're also a beautiful person. So I have a weird question. Yeah. Like, yes. Do you feel like that is beneficial or a detriment? Like, I feel like
that I'm beautiful.
Yeah. Do people like feel more open? Oh. Like, oh, you're beautiful, so now I'm gonna come up to you and say all of these things based on looks alone and make assumptions because you're beautiful on top of it, and then it's like, oh yeah, political science, and then you just like drop the hammer.
Well, first off, thank you so much, Jackie. Yeah. I think that, yes. I don't know how you feel about this as a Black person. Katie, I don't know if professional things you've ever realized about Black people, but there are some Black people who are considered more palatable to white people. Mm-hmm. I have a bright smile. I have a beautiful face. I have kind words to give to people, and I'm very well-spoken. Not for a Black person. I'm just well-spoken for a person. And I think that, yes, in a way, because I am given that access because of how I am viewed by my cis straight white counterparts, whether those are commas between or just one person, I am often put in a position where I now have the opportunity, because I have this access, to look people in the eye and be like, also, by the way, now that I have you all here, because you're talking about my smile, and you're talking about my skin, and you're talking about whatever, I'm like, I'd also like to remind you that Black people are killed for no reason in this country. America hates queer people, and you should give all of your money to Black trans people. I think that, like, there's all, because that is how I have reshaped the tool. I believe that every sword has two edges, unless it's a katana, but, like, why carry a katana if I could have a broadsword? And my broadsword on one side is, I'm very hot, beautiful, and sexy. And on the other side, it's also, you don't get to forget that my people are in danger. And so I think it's about always using that access in that way. I found myself, actually, so did Clayton in high school. Something that we had in common is that we were Black people who our white administrators adored. We were given lots of access and lots of podiums to stand on to spout our ideas off. And I think that we never for a moment didn't take an opportunity to be like, by the way, do not forget about your Black students. Do not forget about your queer students. They all matter. And so I think that, yeah, that, I think it comes down to that. Like, nobody in this world is without privilege. It quite literally can't exist unless you're literally the child born into Africa with AIDS and you die at the age of two, everybody in this world has privilege that they can access. So I think about my privilege as a palatable Black person. How do I use that to uplift and celebrate Black people who are not found palatable? And then when it comes to being cis-assumed, I have to stand up for women. I have to stand up for queer people who look more femme because I have this access because of how I am perceived by other people. And I think, so I, like, my biggest message sometimes to people is, like, White people, if your Black friends are telling you shit is weird, believe them. Cis people, if your trans friends say shit is weird, believe them. Like, if men, if women are telling you shit is weird, do not for a second say, what do you mean? Just believe them. Because nobody in this world chooses victimhood. It's a very hard thing to get out of. And I think even as Black people in America, sometimes we're just innately seen as victims in a way that is bad for us. And so I think that, like, if there is privilege to be used, use it. And otherwise, like, why even have it? And you're only using it to make your own life comfortable, I believe you're doing the wrong thing.
That's such a good point. And I love the idea that you need to leverage whatever that privilege is that you have. Yeah. But also, we talk about this quite a bit on this podcast because it is something that we know comes up in so many different parts of our lives. It's listen and believe. It's that, you know, and that second piece of, like, agreed. Not just listening, but also validating the experience that person has. Whether you've had that experience or not, this is their perception. This is their experience. This is what they are going through. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the piece that folks sometimes miss is that believing part. As a trans person, as a Black person, this is what I have experienced, or this is what is happening to me every single day. And being able to say, I don't know that experience because I have not had it, but I believe that this is what you're living through. This is what you're experiencing. Mm-hmm. So I just think that's great. Like, thank you. Cause I think that's a great and valid point that folks forget sometimes.
I always say you have to assume their truth. That's what's annoying is that, and this is what happens that I get really triggered. So, you know, I'm a Black woman and I say, you know, Chris said something that was inappropriate and racist. And then they turn it into a threat over somebody who already knows what it's like to be marginalized. Like, are you saying they're a racist? Mm-hmm. Should we fire them? Right. And then you're just like, because of being all of the things that you've experienced, you don't want somebody to lose the livelihood for their whole family. When that doesn't go on the flip side, right?
Mm-hmm.
When they say, like, when Karen in Central Park calls, you know, the cops because she's mad because somebody's mad. She's not thinking, oh, like, this could be the end of this person's life / career.
At all. Life. Yeah, there's no, I think that in a weird way, but also not at all. There is an empathy deficit in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, not the world. Let me actually make it smaller. There is an empathy deficit in America.
Yeah.
Because of things like rugged individualism. You believe you've taken the brunt of it no matter what. And the truth of the matter is that you're picking up daisies compared to the next person. Everybody is. There's always somebody who has it worse. And I think that, like, I am Black. I am trans. I'm non-binary. I live in the South. I live in a Republican state and I'm a socialist. Like, I could beat most people in the oppression Olympics. Like, I'm Simone Biles and they're trying to play catch up. But the truth of the matter is, like, I don't
Helvetica's a goat, that. Just so we all know. Helvetica's a goat.
That's right.
Thank you. I don't want to do that. I want to use the space that I have to uplift people who are worse off than me, because life is too short to spend it all the time being beat up, in my opinion. And I just think that things like intersectionality and having people who are intersectional take the, you know, like, I don't want to ever, like, it's like how affirmative action has actually only served white women statistically, and how there's no reason that a person at the head of HR should be cis and white, because they quite literally lack the intersectionality to empathize with a certain amount of people. And so I think that, like, when we're talking about intersectionality and how powerful it is, all it does is create more webs. I tell people that intersectionality is like bilingualism. If you speak Spanish and English, you're doing great, because you can speak to people who speak Spanish and people who speak English. And then you can meet other people and you're like, oh my God, do you speak both too? But let's say you speak Spanish, English, French, and Russian. You've quadrupled who you can touch. You've quadrupled who you can reach, you know? And experiences like Blackness are not universal, but they do manifest in similar ways to, like, how misogyny affects white women and how queer phobia affects some queer people. And so you have this intersectionality and you can be able to touch these people. And so I think that like people are like, is it not so much for you to be Black, trans, queer, and a drag queen? Like, is that not too much? And I'm like, it's almost not enough. I'm like, I'm looking for the next thing because I want to be able to reach more people. And I think that is very important. And I feel like in a weird way, like empathy, especially in the past 4 years in America, has just been wiped from the lips of people. And people who are empathetic are seen as weak instead of being strong. Empathy is hard to know your own stuff, but also take on other people's and look out for them and teach them and help them navigate. It is a very hard thing. And so I think that like all we should be doing right now in a sort of in this weird way is like flexing this muscle of empathy and learning how to look after other people and how to open doors for other people. Why would you climb up a ladder and pull it up after you when you see a line of people who look just like you? And I think that like America teaches us to pull the ladder, that if they want it bad enough, they will build their own ladder and climb over the wall. And it's like, I don't think you understand that some people have never seen a ladder. They don't know what it does.
That's right.
They don't know how it works. And I think that like, I think we just need to get to this point where people are normalizing. Actually, let me not say normalize because it's such a buzzword right now. I think that we should destigmatize leading the ladder behind, helping people up. I realize that nepotism is really celebrated amongst like rich, affluent white people, but it's really looked down amongst like immigrants and Black people and queer people. They're like, how dare a gay man? Like, I think of like RuPaul, and as problematic as RuPaul has been, I think that like RuPaul has laid out plenty of ladders for queer people. And people are like, sometimes people are like, how dare
she hated for it.
And hated for it. And people are like, how dare she do that? And do I think that RuPaul has lots of crimes to answer for? Yes, I do. And I have the handcuffs and I'm waiting. But I think, I think also, Drag Race and all of these other things are these beautiful ways to uplift queer people and to bring other people up the ladder. And when it's RuPaul, it's critiqued, but like people are perfectly okay with the fact that like the Trumps only lift up each other.
Right.
Like that's normal. Like, God forbid, like,
right?
Somebody open up, you know, like, I just
and
think
RuPaul,
like,
when you think about it, was the only one. Sorry, but RuPaul was the only one who could do that
for a long time.
There is not, you know, now plenty, but when it first started, because they were, like you were saying, more palatable. This is one everybody knows RuPaul, and we've had this, and it's been a long time. So there's a certain level of acceptance where, especially like, well,
there's been two drag renaissances in the 90s. RuPaul's at the head of it, and in the 2010s, and RuPaul's at the head of it. I think that like RuPaul is literal Black history and does deserve a lot of flowers. And I think that at the same time, he probably has a lot of stakes that he has to be burned on as well. But that also is just territory that comes. Nobody is perfect. There's always the man that's behind the mirror, not the man that's just looking in it. So I think that yes, really great person, has uplifted a lot of queer people in a brilliant way, but also has lots of crimes to answer for. But who doesn't, who has lifted people up? And so, yeah, I just think that like there's this weird empathy deficit that we're suffering. And I think that like the reason it's so important that like podcasts like this exist and like shows like Drag Race exist is because they open up the world to empathy. Like what you guys are doing here in the title alone is incredibly empathetic work. And like there is no weakness in that, you know. Like I know you've had Ghouli on, like the love of my life, Ghouli. Yeah. And I think like that is so
the love of all of our lives.
All of our lives.
The love of all of our lives. Who literally doesn't love Ghouli? Oh my God, I love Ghouls. I just talked to them today. They're so lovely. It's like something like this is what, these are the conversations that have to happen. And whether it's being recorded on a Zoom meeting or whether you're literally like chewing on a breadstick in the hallway at work with like your server friend, you're like, girl, what the fuck is going on? Like, even if it's something as simple as that, it is still an incredibly beautiful thing. And I think that people should not be as scared to speak in this weird way. There's people who are like not afraid to say anything, and there are people who are afraid to literally pull up anything. The first thing I sit down at Thanksgiving and say is, who'd you guys vote for? You know, like, I want the drama. I want the conversation to spill over. I want that kind of, like, that back and forth. I want that play. And I think that, like, the more those conversations happen, the more doors will be open for people, because just more will be realized. I think that, like, how do you know what it's like to be a Black queer person if you won't let one talk, if you won't let one speak to you? So I think that empathy is just something that people should really, like, rest into. And I think that for some reason people are really scared of that right now. And I don't know how to fix it, because I'm a little small Black drag queen from the South. But I think that, like, I do... It is, like, I think that it is, like, something people should, like, look out for.
Well, it's just empathy. Yeah, two things that you said there that I think are really important. It's the, you know, you're saying, you know, I like the drama. I like to push that. And it's, there's power in that. There's power in saying,
yeah,
let's have that hard conversation. Because whether you know it or not, you know, Jackie and I kind of joke around about the influencer topic. And in a different way, mm-hmm, that I think a lot of folks are talking about it. We're not talking about taking pictures and, you know, that kind of thing. We're,
yeah,
talking about, like, mm-hmm, how are you lifting others up? How are you bringing others to the table to the conversation? And to your point, yes, giving them the mic to say, tell us the things, tell, mm-hmm, us the things that are, I mean, they're like cis assumed. That's a word I had not heard before. So thank you for, yes, sharing that one with me. I had that. Yeah, that's a new one.
That's why
me.
We do the show. I love that too. Yeah. That is very cool. Sorry. So go ahead.
Yeah. No, no, the power though that you are taking and using by saying, let's have those conversations, let's do this, let's show, yeah, up in such a way, and let's be who we really are, and it's okay, and it's not, yeah, scary, and, you know, you're going to be on our YouTube channel, they're going to be able to see you, they're going to hear you speak and know that, yes, you are very creative, yes, you have all of these things, but also you're just a human as well.
Yeah.
And that is a beautiful thing as well. Like, I think that's, mm-hmm, the piece that folks also, it's the, if I don't know someone who is Black, non-binary, transgender, you know, all of these different things, they, yeah, they're like, oh, I don't know anyone like that. And you're like, well, you probably do, but also here is someone, and it's not scary,
yeah,
and it's not going to hurt, mm-hmm, you and everything, like, and,
yeah,
embracing that and being able to kind of, see people for who they are, yeah, as humans is critical. So sorry, Jackie, I know you're going to say something else.
No, I just feel like I know that we're going to have a part two, because of the whole political side and bringing that stuff, I think, is really important. Like, this is just the opener to Helvetica.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There's, like, and that was the same thing with, the thing that was funny with Ghoulie is that literally, if you've listened to our podcast, me and Katie never are lack for words. We were literally gagged. We were literally both sitting there like, and, yeah, similar to you, it's like, oh, you're just, you know, Clayton's
say
friend.
More words.
Like, whatever, you're going, mm-hmm, to go, you know, eat fries and go, like, to the crick.
No.
Because we live in Waco.
Yeah.
But no, she just said, we're going to go have breadsticks at Olive Garden.
That's right.
With the Alfredo.
That's right.
Or the,
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
Sauce.
No, yeah. Literally.
And so it's
gotta,
like,
make it happen.
Oh. And in a weird way, it's like, oh, thank goodness that, you know, there are people like you give me hope. People like you give me hope, because I know that you're there, right? Like, I know that this is happening and that these missions, and it's, yeah, easy to be really separated, you know, and from real issues, especially the more jobs you have and the more things you have and the, mm-hmm, more puppies you have,
yeah,
you're just sidetracked. So then it's like,
yeah,
what's going on? And so for this, I think that it's great to know. I don't know. For some reason, it just makes me feel better.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcast, and now available on YouTube.
Thank you. I completely agree. I think that, like, Recently, I went through a very like dramatic moment with my transness, I think that there are two very common ways non-binariness manifests in people, because if gender is a spectrum, and you have masculine over here and you have feminine over here, most non-binary people, or some, would like say they float, they go back and forth. Some would say they're the dead middle. But for me and how I experience gender, I don't think there should be a spectrum, because I think a spectrum insinuates there is a way to cap at masculinity and cap at femininity. And there is no way to do that because they're not real. And so I kind of did away with the system. And then for a while, I was really feeling like, sometimes I was having these moments where it was so dramatic. I was like, if I was just a woman, that would be easier. Because this like weird in between was like really daunting on me. And I remember somebody told me, they were like, all people want is to feel seen. That's all they want. They want somebody who sees them and they're like, oh my goodness, you make perfect sense to me. You know what I mean? And I have queer friends, but they're not trans. So they can't ascertain my transness. They can't ascertain mm-hmm. my non-binariness. And lots of them are also white people, so they can't ascertain my blackness. Does shallow racism, like the and like slurs and like Trumpies, does it hurt my feelings? No, I know that I sit in a place that is just higher, so I'm like, I'm okay. But like the way that racism seeps in and gets really dark for me sometimes is that like my blackness can't be ascertained by white people because there is no experience like the black experience, and so there is almost no empathy to give. You know, and but when I went to Chicago and visited a month ago, I met my roommate Finn for the first time, and I texted my really good friend Hallie, and I was like, I feel like I've just been seen for the first time in my entire life, and that is a really powerful thing that I feel like people short themselves on, is like, because it seems really vulnerable to be like, I just want to be seen, I want to make sense to somebody. And people are kind of scared of that thing. And so I think what happens when queer people see each other and uplift each other is then they start linking arms and they start marching together and they lead these problems. I think something that's very often said in a very supportive way, but in a way that kind of makes me like scoff and turn my head, is like people will say like, as a black person, as a trans person, what do you need from me? And the truth is, I don't need anything from you. I know I'm divine. I know I am different. I walk with this unshakable confidence that no one can shake it. I know exactly who I am and what I'm supposed to do. And I am comfortable in any way that it manifests. Whether that would be like a full medical transition one day, whether that's me just being a drag queen, whether that's me getting to write essays about it or get to do podcast episodes with lovely women about it, like whether it's any of those things, it's like, I am sure you need me to unlock the chains off of you, because being a gender variant person, I understand what gender does and how it shackles people and how it hurts people. But not only do I understand that, I have also freed myself. I surround myself with people who have freed themselves. And so I think that like when we talk about this empathy deficit, we talk about how can we learn. I think the truth is like, I don't think you need to, in a weird way, you don't need us to teach you. You need us to lead you. And I feel like because cis, straight, and white people have, and sometimes all three, because they've always been on top, they feel like because they have all this power, they're supposed to somehow, within their own power, make sense of who we are. And the truth is that you do not need to make sense of who we are. You need to release the power. You need to let it shift. You need to let other people take control and other people navigate, because I think that something that like people don't like to discuss about gender is that like transphobia and homophobia in Africa and like in other indigenous groups of people is a result of colonization. It is a result of colonialism. They did not exist. Queer people were seen as these heavenly bodies, these two-spirited individuals. If you were gay in Africa in some ancient civilizations, you were deemed royalty right away. because they thought, how divine that you need to procreate. You are the last of your kind. You are the first and you are the last, and that is divine. And I think that what has to happen is those people who are now accessing that, like me and people like Bully and people like Finn and people like Clayton, like those people need to lead, because those people have answers about themselves that will have answers for all of the other questions people have to ask. And so, not a closing statement, but like one of my big statements I wanted to make here today when I talked to you guys was like, how do you build empathy, and how do you lead with empathy? You let people who are intersectional, people who possess more empathy on a semantic space, you let them lead. You let them tell you where to go. And if you're scared to follow, that's okay, because the work is also being done for you, because that fear is unsafe. That fear is sad, you know? And so I think that like last summer, you know, when America was debating if Black people deserve to get killed in the street or not, I remember hearing a lot of people be like, you just need to let us lead. You need to listen to us. You need to grab onto our hands, grab onto our hips if we're willing to let you, and you need to listen to us, because we know things you don't, because we have an access to things you do not possess. And so I think that that is a rollover in anything. I think that like, how do I understand more about gender? Why don't you let people who don't really believe in gender tell you about it? Like, how do I navigate race? Why don't you let people who get the brunt of racism tell you what the fuck is going on? You know, I think it's that situation. And I feel like people are just really scared to follow when who they're following looks nothing like them, you know? And weirdly enough, in this really crazy way, if the person you're following looks nothing like you, they will probably do more for you than anybody who does. Especially when it comes to like being queer, in any capacity, gay, trans, bisexual. I think that like that is just a very important thing that I think people should be paying attention to, you know, like Googly, as a Tejano indigenous person, has an access in Texas to these innate things that Gregory Abbott would turn the blind eye to. Mm-hmm. People like Googly should be leading Texas. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I think that, yeah, it's very important to like, just, I don't know, sometimes just like shut up and listen. Like, I just think you can learn so much sometimes if you just shut up and listen to people. And just don't forget that like, what might seem loud and crazy to you is maybe just somebody trying to be seen, you know, is just trying to find somebody who hears them and sees them. And if you don't possess the capability to hear and see everybody, let somebody who does walk the walk and talk the talk, let them lead the way. And I think that like, there would just be so much more peace in the world if people just allowed certain kinds of people to lead. But for so long, those people have been told they aren't capable of leading and they shouldn't lead. So that's more of like a rundown, you know, there's a trickle down effect of why those things can't exist. But yeah, I do find it to be very important. And yeah.
So we do a little thing on our podcast at the end of each episode where we share one thing that we want to make sure folks do hear or do learn from the episode. So Jackie, I'm going to give you the mic first. What you got?
It's always so hard. I think the main thing, really, I love the shut up and listen part, but also the leading, right? It's not teaching, it's leading. I think that's great. Because we try to explain that when we're talking about being inclusionary is I'm just, everybody has their own journey that they have to go through. So one class or one book or one, you know, person speaker isn't enough. That's why we try to be inclusive AF on inclusive AF, because the more voices and the more things you get, the more opportunities. So I think I'm going to do that. I'm going to say that.
Mine is going to be similar. It's the kind of that power, like handing over the power. And, you know, I think there is a humility in handing over power. And there is, you know, talking about that empathy deficit. I love that, because I think being able to say, I'm going to step back and not be in power and be led and be taught by someone else is such a killer concept, because I think it's just something that no one wants to give up power. No one wants to say, I don't know. And so being able to step back and say that, I think just takes such humility, and it's something that we all need to do a better job of. But I think also that empathy deficit, we're seeing that everywhere now. Where, you know, you're kind of mentioning there's always, you know, even RuPaul, you know, you mentioned the strides that have been made because of RuPaul, but there's still some things, and it's that mm-hmm. There's still some things, or there's always something. And
yeah,
being able to say, just wow, what RuPaul has done for the transgender community, for folks that are doing drag and are part of the drag community. Wowzers. Like, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think that's the piece too, like being able to kind of be empathetic enough to say, hey, I can't sit here and say I'm perfect or I've always done the right thing in any way, shape or form. So having that grace mm-hmm. as well to say, what strides people are making. I mean, the fact that we are yeah. having you on here and you're sharing so much about yourself yeah. that is personal. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I'm going to stop talking now, because I had like 100 things from this episode, but that's all.
You have to have a part two. I'm telling you. I still
yeah,
like
exactly,
a whole, like,
exactly.
I never got to any of my questions.
You guys are awesome.
Oh. All right. What are we going to do? Miss Helvetica Black, what is your one thing?
I would like to, I guess I would just like take a similar note from like you ladies. And I would say, like, you know, if you've been a RuPaul, you know, like, I think RuPaul has done great things, but he's had his time set back. The people you've helped uplift, you now have capped
at
your ability to empathize, and they need to lead. They need to go mm-hmm. forward. And then he can still maintain his power and host his TV show and, you know, do his thing. But like, you know, like, let the girls step forward, let the dolls do what they need to do. Because mm-hmm. they hold the keys to the kingdom now. And I think, yeah, I think like the last thing I would say to like elaborate on it all would be that queerness is brilliant. And Blackness is excellence. And I think that if you have the privilege of a Black queer person, or a Black person, or a queer person allowing you into this circle where they feel that they are safe with you, when you step into that circle and when you leave that circle to go forth into whatever else you do in your life, take what they tell you within that circle and bring it to everybody else, because nobody will be shorted because of it. Everybody will be better off. And I think that, yeah, we just have to get to a point where we just normalize the ability to just say, okay, I've had my, one of the most powerful things when you open up space for people is not to even be like, they told me this, and so now I'm telling you. It could be to like, instead of me telling you what they told me, let them tell you, mm-hmm. you know, let me make them a guest on a podcast instead of me just taking the information they've said and run with it. Let me, you know, I mean, don't make it as vague in like a paper of like, this person once told me, say, Helvetica Black once told me, Clayton once told me, Guli Alvarez once told me, like that is important. Like, that is powerful. And then just to also know that if you're cis and you're listening, or you're white and you're listening, or you're straight and you're listening, just know that like there is so much to know from these people, and you will short yourself if you don't finish this episode. You will short yourself if you don't. You know, like if you've seen previews of Pose and it's Peter, and it's just you ever went on Netflix and watched it, you shorted yourself. If you've been to a drag show and you've seen previews for Drag Race, you're like, I'd like to know more about this. I'd like to know what these people are like, and you haven't done it. Do the work. Go do it. You know, like, always take that extra step. Always take that next step. Because for queer people and the battles that they fight, what is a small step for you could make a mile of a difference for them, you know? Like, I think that, like, I think that if you're homophobic and you can watch Drag Race and not enjoy it, you are just don't like being happy, you know? Like, I think that it's literally as simple as that. And so I think that, like, yeah, just open yourself up to being opened up. And I think that, like, in no way will you ever regret it. It'll always, always be so powerful and so freeing. And then, yeah, and believe Black people and believe queer people and believe women.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. All right. How can people find you?
My @ is Helvetica Black, HelvetikaBlak, on Instagram and Twitter. My Facebook is still my actual personhood because of employment. But yeah, just Instagram and Twitter is a great way to find me. Go like my post, share my art. If I've tagged a creator that I've collaborated with, follow them and share their art. I would also like to take the time to tell you guys about three brilliant artists who I think that, like, you ladies and everybody else should follow. Follow Finn Levi. It's FINNLEVI. I believe there's an underscore after it. They're brilliant. They're amazing. Follow Marnock Mox, which is this Marnock and then MATS on Instagram. They're another brilliant trans person that I know that makes art. Follow Guli Alvarez. I know they've already been on here, but, like, follow them. Follow Clayton at Banana Bread Clayton. If I have tagged a queer creator, go celebrate them and uplift them, because the love that they get feels like love to me. So.
Aww. Awesome. Love it. Love it. Love it. Love it. Well, Helvetica Black, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is Katie Van Horn.
And this is Jackie Clayton. See, that was pretty good, right? I'm working on it.
Bye.
Yeah, bye. Bye.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.